Welcome to Siege, a podcast about castles and crusades and other Siege engine games, and whatever the hell else we want to talk about. I am one of your hosts, Sam, and I'm here with the other host, George. Hello, George.
Hey, Sam.
How's it going?
It's going well.
On today's episode, we are going to talk about surprise in Castles and Crusades. Before we do that, though, I do want to bring up something from the last episode. If you listened to the last episode, you heard George and I talk about the fact that there is a statement on page 13 about the wisdom modifier affecting turn undead. And the way it's written, you can interpret it to mean that the wisdom modifier informs the number of times you can turn undead. And we went off on that and we sort of talked about it because as it is a valid interpretation, it's kind of also not the correct interpretation. And so we were kind of making a big deal out of it. And I think we didn't also include the other interpretation of it, which is on me. It's my bad. I should have mentioned it. But I will mention it now. So the way that it's written on page 13, it says that the modifier affects the number of divine spells that can be cast each day, comma, attempts to turn the undead, and all checks involving wisdom. The word number there, if you let that word number apply to divine spells and also the word number apply to the attempts to turn undead, then that also means it has to apply to checks involving wisdom. And that doesn't make sense. Instead, actually, the better interpretation is the word number just affects the divine spells. And the comma there that forms the break in that sentence means that the modifier affects the attempts to turn undead because you add your wisdom modifier to your roll when you're trying to turn undead. Not that you are limited to the wisdom modifier number of turns per day. But you could see how the way it's written, it could be seen either way. And I was laughing after the episode because we kind of, you know, that's the only place in the book where it says anything about that. So anyway, so let's move on to surprise. Well, maybe I should ask you, do you have anything to say about the wisdom modifier before we move on, George?
No, I think it's a good interpretation and one to use in your game.
Yeah.
Just to go with that route.
As long as you don't use it to turn paladins, right, George?
Correct. I'm still going through all my player handbooks with my Sharpie, taking that out.
No. All right. So let's move on to surprise. So the surprise rules in Castles and Crusades are found on page 216 of the 8th and 9th printing player's handbook. And the thing is that it's actually a pretty short section, but the rules bring up a couple of intricacies that need to be talked about. So let's talk about what they are. So here's what surprise is. The idea of surprise is that you have a situation in which either the adventuring party or the monsters, when they encounter each other, one of those sides or both is not aware and is not expecting to run into the other one. And in that case, one of those sides or both are surprised. So in combat, if combat were to ensue because of this, the group that is surprised doesn't get to do any actions whatsoever in the first round of combat, which is termed the surprise round. If there is a side that is surprised and a side that's not surprised, then the surprised side gets no actions, and the group that's not surprised, they actually get an entire combat round occurring where they can do a full combat round on their own. And the other side doesn't get to have any kind of response to that because they literally get no action because they are surprised. The rule actually states that it is the CK, or GM if you prefer, that decides if there's a chance that the PCs or the opponents or both are surprised. So the loophole here is that a CK can literally decide they never want to use surprise rules. And so no one's ever surprised because the rule says the CK decides. So if the CK just decides no one can ever be surprised, then no one's ever surprised. And then you don't have to deal with these rules at all. And it's a done deal. End of episode. That's it. Shortest episode ever. But that's not normally how it goes, right? That's not normally how it goes. So, George, how do you determine if you're surprised? If the CK says you have a chance of being surprised, I mean.
I just closed my book. I was done.
Sorry.
I believe it comes down to a wisdom roll, isn't it?
It is. It is a wisdom siege check to see if the side is... So here's the other thing. If the CK decides the PCs could possibly be surprised, then the PCs have to roll. But here's the thing. You can decide that either the PCs roll individually, one for each PC, or that they roll as a group. If you decide that the PCs roll as a group, then the opponents also roll as a group. But if you decide that the PCs would roll individually, then the opponents also roll individually. That way you know individually everybody on the battlefield has made a roll and you know exactly who's surprised. That feels so clunky to me, but that's what the rules are. So generally, yeah. I think they expect everyone to do the group roll, right?
Yeah, that is very clunky, and yeah. I'm not quite happy with it.
I mean, imagine if they're trying to keep it fair, right? That's why it says, yeah. You know, if the PCs roll individually, then the opponents should as well, or if the PCs roll as a group, then the opponents should as well. They're trying to keep it fair. But the thing is, if there's five PCs in the party, but there's 15 goblins, you don't want to have to roll for all 15 goblins. So that's a possible area where you might actually house rule, right? But the rule technically is if all the opponents roll individually, then all the PCs roll individually. And if all the opponents roll as a group, then the PCs should roll as a group too. And then in that case, I think it says you use the highest chance of succeeding or something. But okay. what this does is it actually creates a series of situations that could happen, right? So if the situation is happening and the CK determines that the players, the PCs, not the players, the PCs could be surprised, but the opponents cannot be surprised, then the PCs only are rolling. The opponents don't even need to roll because the CK determined that the opponents don't need to roll. So if that's the case, then you either make a wisdom roll for the entire group of PCs, right? And you would use the PC with the best chance of success. That's what the rule says, that you would have that PC roll, the one with the best chance of success. And the CL for that check is the highest hit die of the opposing group, plus any circumstance modifiers. So if there's crinkly leaves on the floor, if there's lots of heavy mist, if there's any obscuring terrain, if there's a bunch of ogres trying to ambush somebody or something, then you would take all that into account as part of that challenge level, plus the highest hit die of the creatures in the opposing group. So that's one way. That's one situation, right? The PCs can be surprised, but the opponents can't. But there's another situation. If the opponents can be surprised, but the PCs can't. Now, the PCs don't roll in this case. They don't roll to see if they surprised the enemy. Instead, the CK rolls the surprise check for the opponents. And so you're going to make one in general. I would do one roll with the group, one roll, or every individual rolls. If you make one roll, then it's the opponent with the best chance of success, just like for the PC side.
Right.
And the CL is the highest level or hit die of the PC group plus any circumstance modifiers. So the method is the same, right? It's exactly the same. Like literally you could cut and paste that and it's the same exact like set of sentences. It's just who's rolling. So remember in Castles and Crusades, there are no opposed rolls. So generally the way I like to describe that is it's always the active player rolling. So if the question is, am I surprised? I'm the one rolling to see if I'm surprised. If the question is that group of enemies over there surprised? They're the ones rolling to see if they're surprised. I'm not rolling to see if I surprised them. Okay. That's how it works because there's no opposed check. So if you succeed, you're not surprised. So you can act, you can do whatever, because it's just a regular combat round at that point. If you succeeded, you're basically going into a regular combat round. If you failed the wisdom check, you're surprised and you don't get to participate in that combat round. You might participate in terms of someone attacking you or doing something to you or attempting to do something to you, but you don't get to participate. You are literally surprised. You get to do nothing. But this whole situation makes it so that because it matters, you know, whether the CK says someone can be surprised or not, and then they make the roll or they succeed or not, like that sets up a situation where there are, you know, five possible outcomes. What's some of those outcomes, George?
That both the PC party and opponents are surprised. So there is no surprise round. You just roll initiative and you go right into combat.
In other words, they both fail their surprise check.
Yes.
Right. So in other words, if the CK says it's possible to be surprised, but then everybody fails their surprise, like everybody, it's possible everybody's surprised. You're both walking along the trail and you had no idea that when you rounded this corner, you were going to come face to face with this group. You're both shocked and everybody fails their surprise roll. You're all surprised. So literally, there's just the surprise round is everybody standing there for a few seconds being surprised. And then you just have a regular combat round. So there is no surprise round. So you basically skip it at that point. Right. So it's possible, even if somebody rolled to see if there was a surprise and people failed, but yet there's still really no surprise round because everybody failed. What else could we have?
That the PCs are surprised and they can act while others who aren't can. So meanwhile, some of the creatures in the opposing party are surprised and cannot act, but some are not surprised. Those surprised can act and the others do not.
In other words, a mixture. So some PCs got surprised and some didn't. Some enemies got surprised and some didn't. So you still have a surprise round and the only ones acting are the ones who succeeded on their surprise check, right? They didn't fail their surprise check, but that means that some of them are surprised and right. So some people, so you have to then keep track, right? Okay. Which ones of the enemy forces can act and which don't, and which of the PCs can act and which don't. So that becomes a little bit more complex, right?
Very complex. And I could see it slowing down the game a bit.
Yeah, that could really, that's what happens if you have everybody roll individually and some succeed and some fail, right? This is one of the benefits of having the creature groups and the PCs, having them roll as a group makes it really easy to adjudicate. If you have everybody roll individually, then suddenly it becomes very hairy to sort of work through that sometimes. You can also have a situation where some of the PCs are surprised, but none of the opponents are, right? And so that means that some of the PCs get to act and all the opponents get to act, but some of the PCs are surprised, so they don't get to act. And then you have the opposite of that, where none of the PCs are surprised, but some of the opponents are. So all the PCs get to act and some of the opponents do, but some do not. Right. And so, right. Yeah. And then you have the last case, which is none of the PCs are surprised and also none of the opponents are surprised. And in that case, that's the same outcome as if they're both actually surprised. Right. So what's funny about this is the first one that you mentioned and the last one that I just mentioned have the same outcome. If both groups are surprised or both groups aren't surprised, you get the same outcome. There is no surprise round. Because everybody's doing the same thing. You just roll initiative and you start your first combat round.
Exactly. So, Sam, can we take a moment to talk about some of the die rolls that would be happening here?
Let's pretend like we're just going to roll as a group. So all the PCs would roll and it would be the highest, like the PC with the highest chance of success. And for the creature group or the opponents, it would be the one with the highest chance of success. But then I mentioned earlier that when you roll the CL, because to remind you of what a wisdom siege check would be, you're rolling a D20, you're adding your level, and then you're adding your wisdom bonus. But then the number that you're trying to meet or beat is called the challenge class. And the challenge class is made up of the challenge base. And if you're prime in wisdom, the base would be 12. And if you're not prime in wisdom, the base would be 18. But then you add a number to that called the challenge level. So this is what the CK is doing kind of behind the scenes. They're saying, okay, what's the challenge level for this role if this party's trying to figure out if they're surprised? And the challenge level is the highest hit die of the opponent group, right? So, you know, let's say that's a 3. And then any circumstance modifiers. And so I wanted to mention in this episode about the circumstance modifiers. And the reason I want to mention it is because I think they make the game a little more interesting. If you're actually going to bother to do like a whole surprise round thing, or more likely when there's an ambush set up, that's when this kind of thing would come into play. So it's not that you're going to suddenly pull out a giant list of modifiers like on a normal, you know, in any normal everyday encounter. But if you've got a setup where the party's trying to ambush somebody or someone is trying to ambush the party, then this could actually make it a lot more interesting. But the problem is, and I'm telling on myself here, because normally I like to say, hey, George, we should just talk about the PHB. We just need to be talking about rules as written, and then we can talk about how to add or subtract things from that or how to do house rules and all that. But let's do rules as written first. But the situational modifiers for surprise checks are talked about in the Castle Keeper's Guide, not in the PHB. So in the Castle Keeper's Guide on page 321, you find a really interesting table. It's table 17.11, so it's in chapter 17. And the name of the table is actually Surprise Circumstances. And what this does is it gives modifiers for common circumstances that might be occurring during an ambush. But the thing is that you don't have to be in an ambush to use this table. It could be any, it could give you a clue on any type of modifier that might affect something. So for just to give you one example, if you're trying to surprise someone and you're clunking down the hall or moving behind a rock or something, and you're in heavy plate armor, the CL for the ones that are could be surprised, because they're the ones rolling to see if they're surprised, their CL is -2. That is, the challenge is reduced by 2 because you're so loud in your heavy plate armor. If you're trying to surprise someone and it's absolutely pitch black dark, the CL for the ones trying to figure out if they're surprised is a lot higher. It has a 4 added to it because they can't see because it's pitch black. Or if they have a torch, but it's pitch black everywhere else, you can see them really well, but they might not be able to see you. So it's their CL is 4 higher. Or if you're trying to surprise someone, but those people are expecting the attack, if they got word that there was going to be an ambush, then the challenge level for the ones rolling to see if they're surprised is lower by 3. In other words, it's harder to surprise them because they're expecting you.
These can be combined. For example, if it's bright outside, then it's harder to surprise someone, so their wisdom CL goes down by 2. And if they're expecting an attack, it goes down by 3 more. But if you are behind some thick foliage, the CL goes up by 2, and you can add these up as you go. So say your party is about to be ambushed by some 3-hit-die mongrel men in the bright daylight, and you are on high alert and expecting an attack. The CL starts at 3, plus 2, since they're hiding behind some boulders, minus 2 for the bright daylight, minus 2, they smell really bad. The total is, well, they do.
I know.
3 plus 2 minus 2 minus 2 equals 5 minus 4, or at the end result, 1. So you rolled the d20 plus wisdom modifier plus level and try to beat their, either they're a 13 if prime or a 19 if non-prime.
On the other hand, if you were, instead of being in bright light, you were in darkness, that would mean that the CL starts at 3 plus 2 because they're hiding behind boulders, plus 4 because it's in darkness, minus 2 again because they still stink really bad. So even though it's dark, that stink, the stench didn't go away, right? So the total CL is 3 plus 2 plus 4 minus 2. So that's 9 minus 2, which is 7. So now you make the same roll, d20 plus wisdom modifier plus level. But now you have to either beat a 19 if you're prime or a 26 if you're non-prime. And a 26, that might be hard to beat if you're low level. But if you're level 10, you got to roll a 16. That's still pretty high, but it's not insurmountable. But if you're level 1, you can't even make that roll.
I really like it. I think it works pretty well. It's just doing it quick enough.
Yeah. Well, so this is why I said, and this is, I think, why the Castle Keeper's Guide mentions it like in an ambush situation, because it's not something you're probably going to just come up with on the fly necessarily. That would take too long, right? But you might set up a table where if you have a certain area of your game setting, like a forest or something where there's a lot of a certain type of creature that likes to ambush, you might have like a setup where you can very quickly calculate what the modifier would be for an ambush in that area, right? And you would just have it there. You would have it prepped because it's an ambush, not like a random encounter, okay?
Correct, yeah. So part of the reason we were saying about using surprise and not using surprise or overuse of surprise. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want the players to be able to see the situational conditions for surprise mm-hmm. because to them, it could become a checklist rather easily.
Right. Right. I would have them like just describe to me what they're doing. Right. And then I would be the one that applied the modifiers because I'm going to be the one rolling to see if the creatures are surprised anyway.
And I like the idea that you posed earlier about the leaves, you know, like just mm-hmm. some leaves in the area to make a noise to, right. You know.
I mean, kobolds are pretty notorious for setting up little, you know, tripwires that they're not going to hurt the opponent that's coming in, but they'll like jingle some rocks and make them fall down, or they'll shake some bells so that the kobolds know when someone's in their area, right? Like things like that could be really good in an ambush, right? Because the thing is, like an ambush, and so dear audience, what I was saying to George earlier was these ambush rules suddenly feel very sort of heavy, right? There's a lot of stuff we talked about and there's a lot of things going on. And I wouldn't necessarily use this sort of full-bodied surprise setup all the time. I would use a very basic siege, you know, wisdom siege check, whatever, you're done. Like that, it's very quick. But if the party wants to set up an ambush, right? Or if they're going into an area that they have heard is set up for an ambush, right? And so you could set up a whole, it becomes like a whole scene where you're trying to either avoid getting trapped in the ambush or you're trying to set up an ambush to trap your enemies. Like that's where you want to really go into, okay, well, we're going to put leaves in the center of the pathway so we can hear when they're coming. And we're going to make sure that we set the ambush up where there's a big canopy. So the light's very dim. And so they don't have good vision in the area, like all those sorts of things. But as George said, you wouldn't want them to have like a checklist, right? And then your party is just, the players are just going down, oh yeah, we're going to do this and this and this and this so that they know they get the best bonuses, right? Like to me, this should be, if they're setting up an ambush, this should be a conversation about what's happening. What are they doing to set it up? Are they just hiding behind trees? Because that's still an ambush. It's just not a very elaborate one. It's just we're hiding until they come into view, right? But if they're setting up a real true ambush with a lot of different elements, not because of a checklist, but because they think it's cool to do, then I can start sort of stacking up the bonuses and it's going to make it really hard for those enemies to avoid that ambush.
I think another part about this is when you're being active, like you think that there's going to be, a situation where you're going to be surprised. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when you're most alert, you're most vulnerable as well to a surprise. For example, you might be, you know, going down a dark hallway, you're looking and focusing, you know, what may be ahead of you mm-hmm. and not what may be above you or to the left or right or even your rear.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And I almost think like a tunnel vision kind of effect.
Yeah. Yeah. You're focusing so much on one thing that you're vulnerable to other components.
Right.
Of surprise.
Right. Yeah, which is sort of the thing that happens with like slimes and jellies, right? Like the whole idea is those things are not easy to detect in the best of times. So they often, you get surprised because you think you're going to get ambushed by something different. And so you're focusing on trying to find the signs of the kobolds or you know, goblins or ogres or whatever. And instead you get slimed because you totally weren't looking for that kind of opponent.
Oh, sorry, the slime part, the reference to Ghostbusters.
Now, the thing is that I mean, we could give some other examples, too. So, George, let's just say let's say I've got a group of PCs and they're level 5. OK, and they're in a dungeon. So it's kind of dark, but they have torches and lanterns and stuff. And there's a group, let's say there's a big Etten, right? A big giant Ettin that is in one of the rooms, and the group hears the Ettin kind of walking around and mumbling, and they decide they're going to ambush the Ettin. How successful do you think they could be?
Wow.
An Ettin is a 10 hit die creature.
Oh, 10 hit die. So it's going to be a difficult roll. It depends on some of the actions that they try to take to improve their modifier, right?
You might think so, but I'm asking you a trick question that has no answer. I'm pulling a My Cousin Vinny on you. It's a BS question that you can't answer. And the reason is because an Ettin cannot be surprised.
Oh, because of the two heads.
Right. They have heightened senses of smell, sight, and hearing. They have twice as many eyes, ears, and nostrils. And so they literally cannot be surprised, no matter what you do. That is in the Ettin's description on Monsters and Treasure, 5th printing, page 109. And the reason I tried to trick my poor co-host, who did not know I was going to do that. Everybody, George's co-host is kind of a jerk. There is a list of creatures in the M&T that can never be surprised. So you can never set up an ambush against them that is successful. You can never come upon them and then test to see if they're surprised. The PCs can be surprised, but these monsters will never be surprised. The first one that's in the M&T is a creature called the Barbagazi, which is on page 33. They are so in tune with their surroundings that they can never be surprised if they're encountered in their icy lairs. So if you see one in a forest, which you're not likely to, but if you did, then they could be surprised. But they can never be surprised if they're in an icy area. Buck-ons, which are on page 48, can be surprised if you're not in a woodland setting. But if they are in the woods, they can never be surprised, ever. And of course, what's their main environment? The forest, the woodlands. They're probably not going to be located or found or encountered outside of the woodlands. So effectively, this means they can never be surprised. I mentioned Ettins. What else is on that list, George?
The Prismal Eye. I mean, if there was going to be a creature like a beholder, it might be the Prismal Eye.
Yeah. It's on M&T page 249. And not only can it not be surprised, you cannot sneak attack or back attack it. So don't try to have a rogue attack this thing. It's not going to work very well.
And then there's the classic Rakasha, and that's on 255. And they're immune to surprise and cannot be sneak attacked, backstabbed, or death attacked.
Yeah, so death magic cannot even take out a Rakshasa, which is pretty amazing.
Evil creatures.
Yeah.
Luckily, they can't turn paladins either.
Well, that's true. Rakshasas. Well, I don't know if I had a Rakshasa cleric, could it? I mean, they are evil, right? Yeah. Oh, now you've done it. Now I have to make a Rakshasa cleric. So along with some creatures in the M&T that are never surprised, at least never in certain environments, there are creatures that can surprise the party very easily. They themselves can also be surprised, but they are especially good at surprising the PCs. So for example, the Assassin Vine, which is on page 26 in the M&T, because it's so, it has like this camouflage ability, it is indistinguishable from an ordinary plant. So it automatically gains surprise on a roll of a 1 to 7 on a D8. So in this case, and by the way, the person, the PC, the victim in that case that is being surprised does not get a wisdom save against that surprise. They don't even get to check. They don't make a regular wisdom save or wisdom check to see if they're surprised. Instead, they just, the DM or CK rolls a D8, and on a 1 to 7, all the PCs in the area are going to be surprised if that assassin vine decides to attack. So not only is it easy for that thing to surprise PCs, but it actually uses a different rule for surprise in that encounter.
Which we come to expect. The Gru on M&T 171, and I believe these are all from the 4th printing or the 5th printing?
Fifth printing. Yep. Fifth printing is the one that has all the Fey in it, and it has the big Chimera thing on the front.
I was looking at my fifth printing, which is the classic homage cover.
Yeah.
The Gru on M&T, page 171, will attack by surprise, gaining a free attack before initiative it is rolled. No ability check is given due to the Gru's natural ability to perform perfectly well in the darkness and its ability to stay silent in its attack.
So, in other words, again, a creature that breaks the surprise rules, right? Because the normal surprise rules would say the PCs at least get a wisdom check chance to see if they're surprised. But both the Assassin Vine and the Gru violate that, and they don't allow for a check. Next, we have the Gargoyle, which is on page 152 of the M&T. And if you're in an area with statues, ruins, and lots of stone facades and stuff, and the gargoyle remains perfectly still, they are basically undetected. And in that circumstance, anyone who could be surprised, any PC that could possibly be surprised, they do get a wisdom check here, but the CL starts at a 10. So it's a lot harder. So it's very easy for the gargoyle to surprise those creatures.
So that's a situation where it's breaking the rule of the hit die.
Well, yes. I mean, what is the gargoyle's HD? It's got to be, what, a 4 or 5, 6 maybe? 5. Yeah, 5d8 hit dice. Yeah, exactly. So basically, the CL is twice the HD of the creature. Yep.
Next up is the Ketch. Is that how you pronounce it, Samuel? The Ketch?
That's how I pronounce it. I don't know if that's actually correct.
The Ketch, they're like large monkey-type creatures. All surprise rolls are made at a -2 penalty by groups with the Ketch attacking. Likewise, it's very difficult to surprise a Ketch in a forest setting.
Yeah, so like the Ketch, it's the monkey thing that kind of hangs from branches and it drops on unsuspecting foes. I think that's why they get the extra penalty to the surprise roll, something like that. And finally, in terms of the creatures that surprise easily, is one of my actually favorite creatures. I put it in a lot of different adventures that I do. It's called the Necrophidius. It's on Monsters and Treasure, page 231. It's this sort of giant skeleton of a huge snake, but with like a human skull as the head. And it is always completely silent, and it will surprise 50% of the time. So you don't make a wisdom check again. It's just that there's a 50% chance of you being surprised. So actually, the way it's written, what it says is 50% of the time, the creature surprises whoever the opponent is. So the CK rolls to see if it's one of those 50% of the time. The other 50% of the time, then the creature just gets to make a normal surprise. So it's not that 50% of the time they're surprised and 50% they're not. It's 50% of the time they're surprised with no actual roll, no ability to not be surprised. The other 50% of the time, they get to make a roll. So they still could be surprised if they fail the roll, but they also could be not surprised if they succeed. And the reason is for this is because the Necrophidius, even though it's this like giant slithering snake, you know, creature, it's magical and it is completely silent. So, it's interesting. Skeleton of a huge snake, but it's kind of magical. So, you know, you get the idea. Like you would think it wouldn't be silent, but it is.
Next up is a creature that can never surprise, and that's the Ogre Rat. And I recommend using these because they are a very unique creature. They can't surprise because they're constantly clicking their teeth when at rest, and they do have 6 legs, so the creature can actually gain ground quickly, and they always gain initiative on the first round. That does not mean, though, that they can't be surprised.
Right. They could be surprised, and then they wouldn't have any initiative in the surprise round because they were surprised. But in the first actual round where they roll initiative, they don't really roll. It's just as if they rolled a 10.
And it's a nice little 3-hit die creature. Armor class 13.
They're fun to put like in the bottom of a pit. They're really good for that because they're kind of like rats, but they're more devastating. Yeah.
Why would you put them in the bottom of a pit? That is horrible, Samuel.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes PCs fall into pits. I don't know what to tell you, George. And then we come to my favorite special case of surprise. And when I say favorite, I don't really mean favorite. My favorite special case of surprise occurs in two places in the M&T, the giant frog and the giant toad. The giant frog is on page 149 and the giant toad is on page 290, but they both say the same thing. In the text of the creatures, so think about this. So these are giant frogs. These are pretty traditional D&D creatures, right? Huge giant frog. It ribbits. It stays in the water. You can see the shine of its eyes. But if you get too close to it, it could swallow you, right? Whips out its tongue. Its tongue is sticky. It grabs on. It swallows you. So everybody gets the idea there. But here's the thing. Here's what it says. It says in the entries for both these creatures, they get a +5 to hide checks. And then it says they get a +10 bonus to surprise checks. That's the terminology they're using. A +5 to hide checks and a +10 bonus to surprise checks. And so this can be interpreted in two different ways. It can be interpreted that the +5 to hide checks means that if a PC is actively looking for the frog, the CL that the PC has to overcome is 5 higher than normal because the frog is hiding extra good or extra well, I should, if I use proper English. The or does it mean that the CL for the party to make a surprise check is 5 higher than normal because it's hidden well, so is more likely to surprise the PC. So you get what I'm saying. When it says a +5 to hide checks, does that mean the frog gets that benefit? It gets it to add 5 if it's hiding, or that the PC has to add 5 to the CL because the frog's hiding so well? Or is the role? Yeah, see, it's confusing. But now let's think about the surprise check. Does the +10 to surprise mean that the frog is very hard to surprise? So it gets a +10 to its wisdom roll when the surprise check has to be made? Or does it mean that the frog can surprise a PC really easily? So when the PC rolls a surprise check, the check for the PC is a CL 10 higher than normal. And how the CK interprets this text is going to make a difference because it's going to inform how you're able to adjudicate that action between the frog and the PC. So George, let's talk about this. So let's say you have a giant frog.
I have a giant frog.
It's in a moat and the party's coming up to this old moat house and they hear some frogs ribbiting, right? They hear the burp, ribbit of a frog, right?
Right.
And so they are sort of aware that there could be frogs around. And so they're looking around. So they're actively looking for the frog. Does it mean that the CL for those PCs that are making a perception check, so to speak, right? A wisdom check to search for whatever's making the noise. Is that 5 higher than normal because the frog gets a +5 to hide checks?
Yes, I would say so. Unless it's a trick question, then I will agree with you.
No, I'm asking, right? Because when you say +5 to hide checks, that implies the frog is actively hiding. But that means that the 5 adds to the CL of whatever creature's looking for it, only if it's actively looking for it. So if the party is ignoring the sounds of the frogs and they're not actively looking, right, then that +5 to hide checks doesn't matter. And then what matters is when the PCs walk up close enough and the frogs want to flop out their long, sticky tongues and they want to find out if the PCs are surprised, that's when the +10 to surprise checks comes in, because then that means that the frog, the CL for the party to not be surprised by that frog is a 10 higher than normal because the frog gets a +10 bonus to surprise checks. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. And then the -3 would come in because if the party would be actively looking.
The -3 from the situational one, you mean? If they were ready for the ambush, you mean? Yes. Yeah. Then the CL would go down. But yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yes. Yes. So that would interact with this as well. Right. Yeah. I'm just saying, folks, be careful with the way the giant frog and the giant toad are written, because I personally think this is an artifact left over from some entry from third edition D&D, I think, because hide checks, I don't understand the +5 to hide checks and then +10 to surprise. I think it means the frog can be really camouflaged. So they can hide well, so they get a +5 if they try to hide. But the problem is, in CNC, the frog wouldn't be the one making a roll to hide, right? The PC would be making a roll to see the frog that's hiding. That's why I bring this whole thing up, because you know, third edition D&D uses different, they use opposed checks and there's different things happening. So having a hide check modifier and a surprise check modifier makes sense in that language. But in CNC, it doesn't really make sense because the frog will never be rolling to hide. So what it really should say is frogs can hide so well that anyone actively looking for them has a 5 added to the CL of that wisdom check to look for them. Right. And because they're hidden so well, if they are trying to surprise some PCs, the CL for the PCs trying to not be surprised is 10 higher than normal. But see, then shouldn't that be the same bonus? Why is one a +5 and one's a +10? Why wouldn't it just all be +10? If the frog is hiding or trying to not be seen and they can hide really well and they can surprise really well, doesn't it seem like that should be the same number? It should just all be a +10, right?
Yeah, it could be. So it's a +5 to hide. If we count that as a situational bonus, which I'm stretching there, so it's harder to find them as a situational bonus. And then they get the +10 to surprise the party.
But they're not rolling to surprise. Surprise check is that the party that could be surprised has to roll. That's always how surprise works. The party that could possibly be surprised is making the roll.
I think you said it best when it needs to be rewritten.
I mean, I'm actually like, I'm not confused because I know exactly how I would rule this, but
yeah,
I think it's an editing error that should be addressed. I think that it should just say, it should just either be a +5 for both or a +10 for both. And just don't even mention hiding or, I mean, we don't talk about a hide bonus for any other creature. We just say, look, if that goblin wants to hide from the PC, then the CL is their hit die, right? And right. if that other creature that has camouflage wants to hide, the CL is their hit die. And that's just the way it works. But somehow frogs get an extra +5 for hiding, but not if they're surprising. If they're hiding and they're going to surprise, then it's a +10. Like it's weird to me that it's separated out. Like I don't understand why that's like that. And all I can think of is it's sort of a leftover from someone's game who really used, you know, who used both of those, but it doesn't really comport with the way CNC surprise rules work.
No, it doesn't. And I straight up don't like it.
I mean, it's just written confusingly and it makes you sort of, you know like, I don't know. I just, that's just not how we do hiding and surprising for other creatures. So anyway, I think I've beat this dead horse enough.
I would like to add, and this is my advice, unless you're running an adventure with giant toads or giant frogs around a moat house, do not include any giant frogs or giant toads.
I mean, the thing is, I like giant frogs. And you know what I do? I just ignore the hide thing and I just do surprise. If they can be surprised, I mean, if the party could be surprised by the toads or frogs popping up, then the CL is just really high. That's it. There's no hide thing, like, you know, whatever. They hide like everything else hides. It's fine.
And really, at that point, what's the difference between a giant frog and a giant toad?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, well, as a biologist. at that point, yeah. So
there was nothing for slimes? Like slimes and oozes?
Yeah, so I didn't really talk about them a lot because basically, So for example, a gelatinous cube, right? Which just for reference for the audience is on page 152 of the M&T. A gelatinous cube is difficult to see, right? Light passes through them, right? But other things that get trapped in them are visible, like rings and daggers and other things like that, right? Bones sometimes, right? So basically, because they're transparent, okay, they have total concealment, right? So if you're walking down a hallway and there's a gelatinous cube there, right, that's you have to make a wisdom check, and the CL is 4. And if you fail the wisdom check, you walk into the gelatinous cube, right? If you're with a whole, if that's just one person, if you're with a whole party, then you can actually make a check, right? It says using the character that has the highest wisdom score. So it's kind of, the thing is, it never refers to it as surprise, right? So it's not a surprise roll. It's a special condition situation because of what the gelatinous cube is, but ultimately it kind of is just a surprise check, right? If you're by yourself walking down the hall, you make a CL4 wisdom check. If you fail it, you're not surprised. Well, you are surprised, but you're not actually surprised. You just walk into the gelatinous cube, right?
Right.
It doesn't actually provoke a surprise round. It provokes combat, but now you're in the gelatinous cube. So your first turn, you're going to be trying to get out, which is a dexterity save, or you get engulfed, right? So it's not, so the reason I didn't bring it up in this, you know, when we were talking about surprising the creatures is because it's kind of different. I guess maybe that's why I should have brought it up, because it's a different situation. It literally does not say surprise anywhere in this entry at all. So it doesn't really, like, it's a completely unique kind of creature interaction. So. Yeah. So take that for what you will. I mean,
I think just saying it's a different level of surprise says it all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, like
it's not the encounter, like,
right.
It's a different level of encounter as well.
Yeah. And I mean, like the same thing can be said of like a gray ooze, right? They are also considered transparent. They're gray and they're basically translucent, so they can be on a dungeon wall and not really be seen. Basically what it says is if a victim approaches within 5 feet of a gray ooze, it is allowed a wisdom or mental save, depending on if it's a PC or a creature, at a -6 penalty to notice it before the ooze falls on you. So is it a surprise check? Well, kind of, I guess. It's a surprise check with a -6 penalty. Notice it doesn't say a +6 additional CL. It calls it a penalty, right? So you subtract 6 from your roll rather than making the CL harder. A gray ooze is a 3-hit die creature, so you're already having to roll if you're wisdom non-prime, you're already having to roll a 21, so you're not going to succeed unless you're higher level, right? But again, here's another situation where, so none of the oozes talk about surprise. They just have special circumstances where so the gray ooze and the gelatinous cube, they both can basically surprise, even though it's not called that. Whereas the black pudding doesn't do that. And the ochre jelly doesn't do that, except it says they often surprise prey by falling from a high wall or above a doorway, but there's no special ability there. It's just a regular surprise. So the ochre jelly, while it says they surprise, it actually uses the word surprise, it doesn't actually give them any bonuses or penalties. So it wasn't worth mentioning, right? So I didn't actually mention it, you know, in the outline, right? George and I do an outline before each episode, so I didn't put it in the outline because I didn't think it was, you know, I mean, I guess it is kind of interesting that a creature that you would normally think of as something that could surprise really easily, well, it kind of does, but it doesn't really get any bonuses or penalties. So, you know, it really doesn't. It's just typical.
How would you handle, like, let's say a ranger using his conceal skill with surprise?
So remember, concealment has combat modifiers, though. Being concealed has a combat modifier attached to it, too. But so the ranger with their conceal ability, basically, if they're in wilderness, right, they can make a dexterity check and they are now camouflaged so much so as to be unnoticeable. Okay. So basically, so it elaborates a little bit more and it says they cannot conceal themselves if they're being observed. So if somebody's watching you, you can't suddenly become, you don't Correct. Just disappear. Right. But, if the person looks away for just a moment, that then they can, you know, the ranger can still conceal. So here's the thing. If you're concealed, right, and they make the check to make sure that they successfully are concealed. And then if they're concealed, now we have to look at the combat modifiers, right? If someone's looking at them or whatever. And the reason I say the combat modifiers, even if you're not in combat, is because that's going to give us a baseline for how difficult it is, like to actually, you know, to actually see that person, right? That ranger that's hiding. And basically when you're talking about being concealed or you know, cover adjusts AC. So that's directly combat related. But when you look at the situational combat modifiers on page 220 of the PHB, there is a set of modifiers for being a quarter of the way concealed, half the way concealed, or three quarters concealed, or completely concealed. And so it's talking about attackers and defenders, because again, it's talking about a combat situation, but you could actually apply this to somebody's wisdom check if they're looking for. If another creature is looking for a ranger that is completely concealed, well, complete concealment gives a negative 10 modifier to the roll. So right. That creature that's looking for that ranger is not going to be able to find them if the ranger successfully concealed themselves. Because remember, the ranger has to make a roll too to make sure they conceal themselves. If that roll failed, then you know, then whoever's looking for them doesn't have to even roll, right? Or maybe the CK gives them a bonus depending on the situation, right?
Right.
And so if it let's take a different situation and use surprise in it. If the ranger conceals themselves and their roll succeeded, mm-hmm. and they're going to use that as a way to ambush a creature walking by, right? When that creature is coming into that area, I would apply a modifier to that creature's surprise CL, right? I would add like a 6 or a 10 or something to that creature's surprise CL, because if that ranger succeeded on their conceal attempt and they are fully 100% concealed, it's really, really difficult for that opponent to see them. And so it's much more likely that they're surprised. So I would add that modifier from that table to the surprise CL that creature needs to succeed at.
That sounds fair. I kind of like that, especially with using the cover.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing is, like you could either look at the cover, you know, the cover basically is the same as concealed, except it's talking about AC directly. So if a defender in a combat is a quarter of the way concealed by, say, light fog or some light foliage, then the attacker takes a negative 2 to their attack, right? Well, but if you're talking about how does it affect AC, well, being a quarter of the way covered adds 2 to your AC. So that's like the same number, right? Depending on right. who's getting the bonus or penalty applied to them, right? And same with being half concealed, that's a 4. And half cover is a 4, right? You add 4 to your AC, or if you're half concealed, anybody attacking you gets a negative 4, right? Now, you wouldn't right. do both of those, right? You wouldn't do both of those, because then that would be a negative 8 altogether to hit, and that would not work. But it's trying to let you use the modifiers that you find appropriate, right? And just use the thing that comes most naturally to you. So it's giving you a lot of options. It doesn't necessarily mean you stack them all up in this case.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the rules suddenly get very rich and deep if you really start looking into them. And like you say, there is an intersection here where the ranger's conceal ability. There's also, you know, halflings get a bonus to hiding in wilderness settings. When they're outside, they can hide really easily, right? Rogues can hide really easily, right? And those things, you can use those, you know, those modifiers as modifiers to a surprise CL if you wanted to. If you thought it was appropriate, that again is a choice for the CK to make.
Right. Right. And I think players may like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think players would not like that as well. Once you started to use the rule
against them. Right. Yeah. Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? So any benefit that a player group, group of PCs is going to get probably is going to also apply to enemies if they find themselves in the same position, right? So players both love and hate that.
Exactly.
So, you know, here's the thing, right? Like I think that these rules are only about three paragraphs or something in the actual in the PHB, right? They're like in one column, they're like three or four paragraphs, right? And they bleed onto the next column. And so they're not very huge, but actually there are a whole lot of possible outcomes. And then there are a whole lot of creatures that rely on, you know, different surprise elements, right? You know, I think that probably a lot of people are going to be surprised when they hear, hey, there are creatures that literally cannot be surprised. And hey, there are creatures that can surprise really, really easily. And the party doesn't even get a chance.
I like the pun too. That you think that they're going to be really surprised about surprise. Well done.
Thanks. Yeah. Pun intended. But I, you know, this is one of those cases where I think it's confusing to a lot of people because of all the possible outcomes. And so I just want to, I want to sort of my last thoughts on this. I just want to round it up. It's actually really easy. If the CK decides based on the situation that the PCs could possibly be surprised, then they have to roll a wisdom siege check. And if they fail, they're surprised. If the CK decides that the opponents, whatever they are, monsters, alternative creatures, someone else on the road, whatever it is, if the CK decides they can be surprised, it's just a wisdom siege check. So it's just really normal wisdom siege check. The difference is because there's no opposed roll and the result of the roll just applies to that group or that individual. Now you have to look at, well, who's surprised and who's not, and let's go from there. What are your final thoughts?
I've never really used surprise a lot. Mm-hmm. And this has been rather eye-opening going through this part.
You know, would you say that you're surprised about it?
Yes. Yes, I am. the part is, you know, like a lot of creatures are physical primes. Mm-hmm. So I could see like orcs typically getting surprised, you know, especially against higher level PCs, which I can understand that. But there isn't always that, there may not be that good chance of success, you know?
Yeah. But you could think about it like this. That means that there's actually some sort of, there's a reason why, hey, orcs might have befriended an Etten, right? So that they have that Etten that it sort of hangs out at, in the, you know, near their hideout entrance. Because you know that no one's ever going to sneak into your hideout. No one's going to be surprised by a group of, you know, lousy PCs trying to sneak in, because that Etten cannot be surprised.
Right. And that's it. There's a good Etten, not a good Etten, good use of an Etten. They are chaotic evil. It's in the Fire Giants G3 adventure. Mm. And they're posted in spots where, they definitely will pick up on the party and, you know, not being surprised in Castles and Crusades is a definite deterrent to going in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, I think this might be where we end the episode. Where can people find you on the internet, George?
They can find me in the Trollord Games Discord as Ultra Magnus George.
And they can find me on the Trollord Games Discord at DM Samuel. And you can also find me on all the socials at DM Samuel. And you can find me at RPGmusings.com.
Let's keep the Dr. Pepper cold and roll a wisdom check to see if you're surprised or not. Nice.